welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gather to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Senator Mark Begich is joined by Croatia's ambassador to the United States, Kolinda Grabar-Kuratovic. Senator Begich, who is of Croatian descent, met with Ambassador Kuratovic to discuss world commerce, reports from the Senate Commerce Committee, and Croatia's place in the world at an event hosted by the Alaska World Affairs Council and the World Trade Center of Alaska on Friday, August 27th.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome everyone here this afternoon. I'm Keith Steinbaugh. I'm the president of the Alaska World Affairs Council this year. I'd like to introduce head table. Of course, we have our own Senator Mark Begich is here with us today. Glad to have you here, Senator. We have the ambassador to the United States from Croatia, Ms. Kolinda Grabar-Kuratovic, and Mr. Greg Wolf, who is the executive director of the World Trade Center of Alaska, our co-sponsor for this event, and he's going to introduce Senator Begich to us today. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Keith. It's always a pleasure for me to be here at the World Affairs Council. It's an organization that's very near and dear to my heart. I spent nearly 20 years on the board of directors of the council and twice served as the organization's president. So I know the important role that the council plays in the community, and that as an organization that meets weekly, I also know it to be one of the most active World Affairs Councils in the country. My job today is either the easiest one or the most difficult. I've been asked to introduce United States Senator Mark Begich, one of the most well-known people in Alaska, and one that's certainly known to all of you here today. Well, okay, maybe not all, but let's say 9 out of 10. So in a situation like this, I think it's probably best to keep it short, and doing so will allow more time for our two distinguished speakers. But for those of you who may have just moved to Alaska in the past few days, here's some brief background. Senator Begich was elected to the U.S. Senate in November of 2008 after serving as the mayor of Anchorage since 2003. Prior to becoming mayor, Mark served on the Anchorage Assembly, where he has the distinction, I believe you still have the distinction, of being the youngest person ever elected to the Assembly. He was 26 at the time, and where his colleagues three times elected him to serve as their chairman. Born and raised in Anchorage, his priorities in the Senate have included focus on a national energy policy that includes Alaska's oil and gas resources, the development of an Alaska natural gas pipeline, as well as the many renewable resources also present here in Alaska. He is also working to improve the service and the benefits for our nation's military veterans. Since taking his seat in the Senate, Mark has been appointed to a number of key committees, including the Senate Committee on Science, Commerce, and Transportation, the Senate Committee on Armed Services, and the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. He also serves on a number of subcommittees involved with a variety of issues, including aviation, communications, and also the Subcommittee on Competitiveness, Innovation, and U.S. Export Promotion. I've had the pleasure of knowing Mark throughout his years in public service, and working with him from my positions in government and the private sector to promote economic development and international trade. As mayor, he encouraged us in Anchorage to think of our city in terms of being a world city, to look outward for opportunity, and to find our place in the global economy. As our senator, he's doing the same for Alaska, and through his work on the Commerce Committee, is helping Alaska and the United States to be more proactive and competitive in the global marketplace. He has also, throughout his career, worked equally hard to promote better cultural understanding. Today is an example of his efforts to promote both commercial and cultural ties as he gives us an update on his work in the Commerce Committee and introduces us to the ambassador from Croatia. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming to this special luncheon a great friend of Alaska's international community, Alaska's own United States Senator Mark Begich.
Thank you very much, Greg, and thank you for all the work you do. Thank you for the hard work you do with the with the World Trade Center. Also, Keith, thank you for helping put this together. The World Affairs Council is another great organization. And let me commend both of you on your staff and the boards and the great work your organization does to advancing Alaska as truly an international marketplace and hosting important forums like this. Now, if you're not a member of one or both of these organizations, you should be. Is that the plug I was supposed to do? Okay, there we go. They're great organizations. When I was mayor, anytime we had international visitors or opportunities to have international visitors or recognizing our diplomatic corps with here in Alaska and Anchorage, they were always at the front table, ready to help and ready to be there. And the boards have always been very aggressive to do that. So thank you very much. If I can just take a second before I give you an update and a discussion of the ambassador, I want to, you know, some of you probably saw a few signs out there, and I'm wearing a button today, and I want to tell you why I'm wearing this button. The employees here who work very hard every single day are not getting a good deal by the management of this hotel. They have been in union negotiations for the last couple years and have just not been fairly treated. So I am here to show a little solidarity. It is very rare that I walk into this building anymore because of the way they treat employees. So I just want you to know that and wonder why I'm wearing this button. That's why. So let me end there and just say, keep that in mind as they're working very hard here to serve your food, clean up after you, and take care of this hotel, and making sure our visitors who are coming to this great city are recognized and touched in a positive way. But the owners of this hotel needs to get on the stick and do the right thing for these employees. So let me just end there. Yeah, I could go on a... I'm very pleased to be here with Ambassador, the Croatian Ambassador Grabar, and I always do this to her, Karadovic. You know, in Croatia, if you look at her name, it has a C. My family name actually just had a C, but when you came to America, they fixed it. And when I say fixed it, they couldn't understand it. They pronounced it with a hard K. So we are very pleased to have her here. And there are not many in Congress with a Croatian background. Matter of fact, if you can believe it, one thing about Congress, we create caucuses about everything, and we have actually a Croatian caucus in the United States Senate and Congress. My brother Tom is really the family historian and the connection that we have to Croatia. And let me give you a little bit of that, because I can tell you the press were wondering, you know, like Croatia, Alaska, what? And here's the history. Our family roots actually start on my dad's side planted really deeply in Croatia in a small village called Polatopak, just over the first range of the mountains, not far from the Adriatic Sea. They stretched out a living on the rich land, the harvest of the land, harvesting grain and enjoying the bounty from cherries and plums and pear trees. I mean, I just say that and I want those, but incredible. But Tom has also looked back and looked at the history, and several of our descendants left their farms in what was then called Yugoslavia to work in the Minnesota Iron Range. One of those was John Begic, spelled B-E-G-I-C. When he came aboard a steamer in 1911, he entered Ellis Island, and they gave him a new name, B-E-G-I-C-H, and that became his name. He was 17-year-old. John was handed off to the Croatian immigration officer, who verified that he was able-bodied. That was the checkoff. Able-bodied, he can work. Off he goes. And off he went to live in America. John Begic found his way to Pittsburgh, where many, many Croatians first started. Then off to Chicago, and then to Duluth, Minnesota. John finally settled in a very, very small town. If anyone's from Minnesota, no folks in Minnesota, in Eveleth, Minnesota. It is very small. But it had great work, opportunity in the mines, where you could make a handsome wage of $2.10 for a 10-hour day. At the age of 24, John Begic, my grandfather, persuaded his 17-year-old sweetheart, Anna, to become his bride. With the Great Depression taking its toll on their family and the nation, Anna and John produced four children. The fourth was a gentleman named Nicholas, who was born in the spring of 1932. Nicholas was my dad, Nick, Alaska's future congressman, and history tells the story after that. I've been very grateful, and especially grateful, shown to me by my family, by the Croatian community, not only here, but it's very interesting. When I won my election, I had more news interviews from Croatian news than any news outlet in the whole United States all combined. It was the most amazing thing. My staff would come in and we got Croatian such and such calling. We got Croatian this and that. I think we were on the front page of the Croatian news above the fold. I wouldn't say much about the Daily News in that regard, but I'll say I appreciate that more than you can imagine with a color photo. I was impressed. But, you know, before I introduce the ambassador who we've gotten to know in a variety of areas working on issues of entrance into NATO and visa issues and some economic developments, which you'll talk about, this is certainly an audience that I think that, again, needs no reminding of the international importance of Alaska and how we fit in the big picture. As Greg talked about when I was mayor, it was one of the big issues. I thought that we are not just a city within Alaska, and Alaska is not just a state within the United States. We are a state that is an international state. We touch so many different countries in so many different ways. We have a huge amount of export capacity. We love to say we have a trade positive when it comes to our trade from our state, which I, of course, remind my senator friends all around the country that Alaska is actually in the positive direction on trade. But we also like to brag about our air cargo and where we are in the sense of the world. Just last week, or actually, I lost track of time. I think it was last week, right? Or this week? This week. It all, you know, one thing I've learned about the Senate, there is no 5-day work weeks. And when you come back home and they say you're on recess, my son asks me, you know, he's 8 years old, recess, this is good. We get to play. And I said, well, it's not exactly that way. I think maybe we'll go to the state fair in the rain Sunday, but that's about it. But, you know, just this week, you know, I was honored to participate in the first ever Alaska Air Cargo Summit focused on Alaska's role as the gateway to the Pacific Rim, with a strategic location that we all know and brag about compared to the lower 48. As Alaska's international airports serve, our airports serve 40 cargo operators, about 30 passenger airlines, close to 700 major cargo flights coming in every single week. And Ted Stevens International Airport is now ranked second in the country and fifth in the world in the sense of its volume of cargo that we move. And again, a statistic that I love to brag about here, but more so down in the lower 48, especially in D.C., because when I explain it, I always have to say, and they say, well, Alaska, how does that all work? Why is that so important? And I say, well, and I usually look for anything round. I don't care what it is near me. And I grab it, and I have to say this to my colleagues. See, here's the world. It's round. Alaska's here, not down by Baja, not down by California, not in Mexico. We're right here. And oh, by the way, see, when you go from the Pacific Rim, it's faster to get to Alaska than to LA. And when you do that, suddenly the lights go on. They realize where we are. And then we talk about the international cargo and how important that is. Also, as you know, a significant industry for Alaska's economy is tourism, especially the enormous potential for international visitors. 15% of our visitors are international. When that was described to Secretary Locke of Commerce, he was shocked by the percentage because that he did not believe it would be that high. And if you look around, and I've noticed actually this last year and a little bit last year, but this year especially, there are an enormous amount of foreign travelers in our state. And as I've traveled all across the state, I see it more and more. Huge potential market. As a member of the Commerce Committee, we were pleased to pass and work on the passage of the Travel Promotion Act, which creates national public-private partnership to promote travel to all destinations in the United States. Of course, we're biased here. We had an opportunity to bring the person who will be heading this up from the federal government. We, of course, gave her a tour of Alaska, because the goal of that is when they produce those promotional products of the United States, we just want in that 30-second video clip, just one of those glaciers, Mount Denali, whatever it might be, because we know when we show Alaska, people want to come here. They want to see it. They want to touch it. They want to feel it. So we think this is going to be an important part of the promotion. We're actually, from the United States perspective, way behind in this. The ambassador will talk about what they have at cabinet level that deals with tourism and culture. They are way ahead of us. Most European nations are way ahead of us on how they promote international travel, that it's not just left to local communities and hope that the states will do it. They look at it from an international business enterprise, and so should we, and I think this Travel Promotion Act will do a great opportunity for us. The good news also on it, there is no American taxpayer dollar that will be utilized to pay for this. Now, I'm sorry, Madam Ambassador, it does require a small little fee on the visas, we know visitors who are coming here will know that that's going into a high-value return in the sense of the visit they will have here. We think it's an exciting opportunity. Produces about $200 million. Will be designed with private sector advisors and a board that will design and move this promotion for us here. Of course, we believe Alaska will be an important part of that. As you know, another part is and this is good and bad. You know, sometimes when we talk about the dollar and it's not as strong as it used to be, well, that's good for us in bringing foreign tourists here. And that's just a fact, and we should capitalize on that, and this is an opportunity to do it. I will tell you, Secretary Gary Locke, who we have brought to Alaska, as well as seven other cabinet secretaries, Secretary Gary Locke has the ear of the president on this. He knows this is important. Tourism falls in his, but he also has another piece that's very important. The goal of the Commerce Department and now the president is to double our exports in this country. About 52, 56, somewhere right in there, percent of the businesses only export. They export to only one country. If they could double that, the amount of jobs that would be created would be millions to this economy. And of course, as Alaskans, we benefit because we export. Not only do we export raw materials, but ideas and technology. We have huge capacity in our own state. So we know that if we can double up the exports, just doubling that number, it will mean 2 million more jobs to the American economy, which, of course, Alaska will benefit from. So we're excited about that and the efforts that the Commerce Department is doing. These initiatives are always, as we look at them from a national perspective, it's important, again, being biased and from Alaska and representing Alaska, we want to make sure they benefit Alaska. And I believe as these move forward, I hope businesses that you're connected to or related to capitalize on this. And if you want to know more about these issues, feel free to call our office and we will engage you and connect you because we think we have a lot to offer here. For the past 2 days, the ambassador and I have been meeting with Alaskans to find out more about the opportunities and provide her a quick dose of our state's enormous potential. We have, you know, my staff likes to schedule me, how do I describe this? I'm looking at my state director. She's smiling. You can't see her smiling at me right now. Let me just say, if I can breathe in a day, that would be a miracle. But they booked me solid. And of course, they said, we'll help the ambassador do her schedule. And I thought, okay. She traveled day before yesterday, went up to Mount Denali, great views, went through the park, everything. Came back in the town at 3:30 in the morning, give or take about 15 minutes, and then was back up, and all day long we had her meeting with folks, and then we ended, we met with AFL-CIO folks, ACVB, UAA, experts in the Native leaders we also met with. She has had a full day, even met with some students at the university who are, I think, doing Slavic studies, if I remember this right, and so she had a chance to talk about, but she has been full bore. She is not, and she brought her family, her two kids and her husband, and I'm so glad to know they're out in the economy right now spending money. I told her this. I said, be prepared. Anytime we bring people, we love them to be here because they're out there helping our economy. But she has been an incredible person, bringing her official duties as the ambassador and making sure that we can find those connections. In her current position for now more than 2 years after serving as the Minister of Foreign Affairs, she was born in Croatia and lived part of her childhood in New Mexico, where she graduated from high school. In addition to business she's doing here, she and her husband, as I mentioned, her two children are enjoying our state and will travel over the next, I think, another day or so here. It is my great pleasure to introduce to you the Ambassador of Croatia, Ambassador Kiturović.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Senator, for this wonderful introduction. Well, Ladies and gentlemen, it's really a tremendous pleasure to be here today, and I thank you for giving me, for providing me with this opportunity. This is my second visit to Alaska. I was here with my husband 10 years ago, exactly in the year 2000, and we were driving around for about 10 or 11 days, frantically trying to see as much as we could of this wonderful, wonderful state, because we have always been fascinated by Alaska. And at that time, we decided we'd definitely have to come back, and not once, but twice or three times, because there's really so much left to see. And even though on this trip, we had an opportunity to go up to Denali National Park, and tomorrow, hopefully, we'll go down to the fjords and see some glaciers, etc. Definitely, I think that the kids will be the ones who will who will press on coming back, and they actually enjoyed some dog sledding yesterday, etc. So we are investing into Alaska's economy as well. And I have to tell you that I'm not sorry at all, at least, because it's really been a great visit. And Senator, thank you very much again. And I'd like to thank your staff for putting up a schedule that has really given me a lot of opportunities to learn a lot about Alaska, about the way that you do things here. I've learned a lot of things about the possibilities of exchanges in cooperation, in tourism, in science, people-to-people exchanges, etc. So this has been not only a pleasant but a very useful trip at all. I know that I'm not supposed to interfere in the internal affairs of a country, but I just have to say this personally about Senator Begic, because, you know, we Croatians really rooted for him, and we're so happy when he was elected. But I have to tell you, really, looking from the Washington perspective, as a diplomat, as an ambassador in Washington, D.C., and I've met everybody on the Hill, that you could not have elected a better person to represent you, to be one of Alaska's senators. And, you know, I'm not that old, but I've had quite an extensive experience in politics so far, because Croatia is a rather young, new, old country. And my instinct tells you that really he's going to be one of the brightest stars on the political sky, not just of Alaska, but nationally in the United States. And I wish you all the best in that. And really, you know, the region where your family comes from in Croatia is not that different, all that different from Alaska. We have a lot of bears there. So there is a connection, definitely. I mean, some journalists have asked me about connections between Croatia and Alaska. And hopefully, after my brief introduction today, you will get a clearer picture of what Croatia is today, what it has been, and what opportunities we have for cooperation and for building better and stronger bridges of friendship, not just between Croatia and Alaska, but from Croatia and the United States in general. You know, we Croatians are, as I already noted, very proud of our people, of people of Croatian descent all over the world. And unfortunately, because of historical circumstances, I think that nowadays more Croatians and people of a Croatian ethnic background live all over the world than the 4.5 million people that we have in Croatia nowadays. But we're very proud of our people, and we're very proud of our country. It's not a big country when you compare it to the, when you put it in the U.S. Context. The geographical size is about the size of Maryland or maybe West Virginia. Again, we have 4.5 million people. But we have incredible geographic diversity for such a small space. We have plains, we have mountains, we have a beautiful coast with about 1,200 islands. We have a wonderful climate. We're located right there on the 45th parallel. And, you know, we have a saying in Croatia that when God distributed land to different peoples all over the world, he forgot about Croats. And we came up to him and we begged him and we said, you know, God, please give us a piece of land for ourselves. And he finally took pity on us and he said, well, okay, I'm going to give you, let you have the piece of land that I have reserved for myself. So... I'm sure that you know, all countries, all nations have the best of their countries, of their homelands, and that everybody has stories like that. But because of that geographical beauty and of that cultural variety, it helped me and the government actually make our job a lot easier in presenting Croatia to the world and in drawing more tourists, more people to Croatia, and especially in changing the image that we used to have just in the course of the recent decade. In the past decade and a half, Croatia has undergone a tremendous transformation that required a lot of effort, not just on the part of the government, but really on the part of the people. We have gone through a process of transition that is at least a double transition from a country that used to be a communist country with a centrally planned economy on an undemocratic society where you could not even say that you were Croat or Serb. They tried to make a single nation of Yugoslavia at the time, where there was no freedom of speech, no individual freedom, no individual responsibility. We have transformed into a country that has become a working, a functional democracy that today is a member of NATO. And again, I would like to thank Senator Begic for his assistance in speeding up and making the process here in the United States with the ratification of our NATO protocol more efficient and speedier. We are well on the way of becoming a member of the European Union, which I think will happen in about a couple of years. I would say that by the year 2012, we will become a member of the European Union. And when we look back about a decade and a half ago, after we, what we like to say, regained our independence in the early 90s. Unfortunately, we were victims of war and aggression. About one third of our country was occupied. We had a number of refugees that we took care of from Bosnia and Herzegovina that amounted to about one quarter of our population. We had to build our army. We did not have any arms, any equipment. We were under an international arms embargo, whereas the aggressor had all the weaponry, all the equipment of the so-called Yugoslav National Army. We had to build the service sector, the public service. We had to build the civil society, which was non-existent at the time because of the lack of freedom. All of this, we were actually able to, when you look at it financially, finance through our own resources, more than 90% of that whole process, including the refugees from Bosnia and Herzegovina, who were never put in refugee camps, but in hotels or motels in Croatia. So about 90% of all that was financed by Croatia, by Croatia's state budget, by our own revenues. And only about 10% of that was humanitarian and other assistance, for which, of course, we're very grateful. But we're also very proud that we were able to do that on our own. Had it not been for the war today, I think we'd be doing a lot more better, of course. But we've dealt with the circumstances, with the remnants. And today, about 12 years after the last part of Croatia that had been under occupation, Eastern Slavonia, was reintegrated in 1998. Today, we can say that we really have become a positive example of a country that has been able to deal not just with the circumstances of war, but that has been become an example of reconciliation, of return of refugees, of restitution of properties, rebuilding, demining, and even building new infrastructure. And when you visit Croatia, you will see that we have built great new roads that that you can barely see now that there was ever a war in our country, and that everybody enjoys the same freedoms, the same rights, and that in the areas that were previously under occupation, the only problems that people experience there right now, either Croat or Serb, etc., are the issue of economic development, of creating new jobs, of sustainable development, etc. We have done this with help of the international community, with the United States, especially the OSCE, the United Nations, etc. But I think that the primary reason for the success was the determination of the government and of the people to put the past behind and to work towards a new and prosperous future for Croatia and for the region of Southeast Europe. Let me just tell you a few words about Croatia itself, about our national heritage, because a lot of people think that it's a country that just emerged in the territory of the former Yugoslavia after the breakup of Yugoslavia. And not many people know that actually after we moved from the Carpathian region to the region along the Adriatic Sea in the 6th and the 7th centuries, we began to have our own little kingdoms, and we were actually recognized by the Pope at the time, which was the official international recognition, as a kingdom. And we had our kingdom, whose borders changed because of the turbulent history in the region of the Balkans, or Southeast Europe, as we prefer to call it. So the borders kept changing, but we kept our statehood until the 12th century, when unfortunately we lost it in a war with Hungary, and then became part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Habsburg monarchy, etc. So we were part of these different state structures until World War I, when Austria-Hungary ceased to exist and Croatia became part of Yugoslavia at the time, because we as the Slavic nations held the same beliefs with other Slavic nations that we could create a Slavic nation that would finally give us recognition that we did not have within the context of the Austria-Hungarian Empire. Unfortunately, Yugoslavia, the first Yugoslavia, which was a kingdom, and then the second Yugoslavia, which was a communist country, turned out to be a bad experiment that did not work for us or other nations in the territory. And that was heavily dominated just by one nation. So soon after, we started to strive for independence again. We had several unsuccessful attempts, including the so-called Croatian Spring, which was very similar to the Prague Spring in the Czech Republic in the 70s. The external circumstances were not ripe because of the fact that communism was so strong in the whole of Central and Eastern Europe. And even though Yugoslavia was never part of the Eastern Bloc officially, it was considered, we called ourselves a non-aligned country, but it was nevertheless considered to be part of that Eastern world of the Eastern communist bloc. The late 80s and then the early 90s brought about new circumstances, new external environment, with the fall of the Berlin Wall and the fall of communism in all of the countries in Central and Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union itself. So for us, it was a new opportunity, and we rallied together as a nation. We voted for independence. About 96% of people voted for independence in Croatia, which is a really high percentage. But nevertheless, we still had to struggle for international recognition. We had to struggle for the right to exist, even though we had existed as a country for centuries. And even in the times of different monarchies in Yugoslavia, we kept our parliament, the viceroy, etc. So these state structures then, in 1990, we had the first free elections. We had the new parliament, elected a new president, and then some of the hard times began. But they were also, I have to say, glorious times. I participated in that process myself throughout the time. For me, being in Los Alamos as a senior student was a really a very important formative experience that taught me the value of individual rights and individual responsibility. And when I came back to Yugoslavia at that time, I was really, everything bothered me. The fact that, you know, even when you wanted to enroll in a school, one person will tell you one thing, the other person will tell you another thing, and you know, you have the best marks, you have the best grades, but you still cannot get into that school if you do not find a connection. And the remnants of that system, unfortunately, not just in Croatia, but in other parts of Central and Southeast Europe, were reflected in the corruption that you probably have read about that plagued all of these societies. And today, one of the main aspects of the program of the government is to eliminate corruption. Unfortunately, you cannot eliminate it completely in any system, but to really fight against it, sanction it, to educate people about even some socially acceptable modes of behavior that are actually corruption. And I think that in that process we also made a lot of progress, a lot of success, and that that has helped also with this tremendous transformation of the Croatian society, again, from an undemocratic to a democratic society, from a war-torn, a war-affected country to a peaceful country, and a society that has become very tolerant, with a vibrant civil society that takes care not just of human rights and the rights of individual, but really of all the aspects that you see in any other country, from environmental protection to actually forcing for more industrial or more economic activities to different organizations and groups, etc. So today, we are, in this year, 2010, unfortunately experiencing an economic crisis like the United States and the rest of the world. For the past 4 years, we had a growth rate that was around, the average was around 4%. Unfortunately, last year we were down to minus 2.7%. Hopefully, we will be able, with the new government economic program, to bring about more economic activity and growth in the course of this and next year. We're making a lot of progress in the sense of creating a business environment that is investment friendly. So for the past 5 or 6 years, we have been among the top countries as per the World Bank list as one of the top reformers. This year also, the Heritage Foundation placed us among the 5 countries who have done most in the past year in order to improve the business environment and the business conditions. And of course, now that we have dealt with the political issues, trade, economy, the well-being of our citizens are the primary goals. And this is also an area where we would like to expand and deepen our cooperation with the United States and here with Alaska as well. I have to say that my job as ambassador of Croatia to Washington nowadays has been a very pleasant one. When I was a diplomat back in the 90s, it was rather tough. There were a lot of things that we had to explain, a lot of things that we had to work together with the international community to make things right. And today, we still are facing challenges. But again, as I said, with the speed and the will, the incredible will of the Croatian people to undergo this transformation and to become an exemplary European and Western democracy, to be part of NATO and part of the European Union, has really been the driving force of everything that we have done in a very, very complex process of European integration, which entailed the reform of the judiciary, of the state system, further liberalization of the economy. Now, today, we are a free market economy without any restrictions on building a strong and independent judiciary and really providing for the circumstances to bring investment into Croatia, to bring the fresh flow money to even be able to do better. In our bilateral relationship with the United States, we have no open issues. Issue that the senator mentioned, which is the visa waiver issue. Croatia does not require visas of U.S. citizens who visit Croatia for tourist purposes for up until 3 months. However, Croatian citizens are required visas to enter the United States. And even though the process is not burdensome, we get the visas within 1 day, in 1 morning, basically, and they're issued for about 10 years. Nevertheless, for us, getting into the visa waiver program, being able to travel to the United States visa-free would be the ultimate recognition of the friendship between Croatia and the United States, and the fact that we're allies and that we fight side by side in Afghanistan, in other places of the world, and that Croatia is a strong and staunch ally of the United States, and that we will remain so. Therefore, we will continue to work on the program. There were some setbacks in the Congress that are of a more objective nature. We have a relatively low visa refusal rate, which is around 5%. But again, I hope that we will fulfill the conditions and that Croatia will become part of the visa waiver program. Other than that, we work together. Croatia was a member of the UN Security Council for about 2 years. So we worked on the Middle East peace process. We shared the same opinion, the same positions there. We discuss a lot of issues of mutual importance in the context of NATO, but also with in the context of other international organizations and institutions. Croatia today, having been a country that was a recipient of international aid and peacekeeping still in 1998, today we are a donor country. We are a country that is an active participant in peacekeeping operations. We participate in about 13 peacekeeping operations around the world. And in Afghanistan, currently, we have about 300 soldiers, which for you not might seem a large number, but when you consider that Croatia has 4.5 million people per capita contribution, is one of the highest contributions of all the countries who participate in ISAF in Afghanistan. And we are determined to get the job done and to stay there, and I was also and have been one of the supporters of our troops in Afghanistan and of the work that they have been doing, actually the great work that they have been doing there. With the United States, we have, I would say, a rather modest trade exchanges. It amounts to about $730 million per year, out of which Croatia imports from the United States more than $500 million worth of goods. There are numerous opportunities. We have a very strong pharmaceutical industry. We also export a lot of textiles, food, food process items, clothing, prêt-à-porter, lumber also, which probably you would not be interested around here in Alaska, but and also one of the major industries in Croatia, which we're restructuring right now, is shipbuilding, and we build good quality ships. It's difficult to compete with the Asian market, but we try to do the specialized fast small boats that are really, I think, quite a success on foreign markets. We have done quite well in that area, in that respect. Tourism, again, is one of our biggest assets. The beautiful nature, but also, we're looking towards investment into the tourism industry. We still have about 50 hotels that are left from the socialist times to be privatized. We, in developing tourism and building resorts, we're very mindful of environmental protection. Our coast, the Croatian coast, is one of the few coasts in Europe that has been really well preserved, and there is no overbuilding. So when you visit Croatia, you will see that you can actually enjoy the nature, the beautiful beaches. There are a lot of beaches that you can go to and be completely alone. Or you can just sail along the Adriatic and drop anchor anywhere and just dip into the sea and swim, because there are no major currents, there are no sharks, there are just an occasional jellyfish here and there, but once in a blue moon, and that's the worst thing that could happen to you. But you can really enjoy it safely, swim off the beaches. You see a lot of kids swimming in the sea because it's nice, it's warm, it's clean, it's incredibly safe. And it's for me, it's really one of the nicest seas, the nicest coastlines in the world. Well, I would like to leave a few minutes for questions, if anybody has any questions. So I would like to thank you for coming here today. Thank you for your attention. I wish you all the best, and I'm looking forward to your questions or comments. Thank you.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Kolinda Grabar-Kuratovic, Croatia's ambassador to the United States. She and Senator Mark Begich spoke on world commerce, reports from the Senate Commerce Committee, and Croatia's place in the world at an event hosted by the Alaska World Affairs Council and the World Trade Center of Alaska on Friday, August 27th. Following her talk, Ambassador Kuratovic responded to questions from audience members.
Thank you very much. It was very enlightening. When I first heard of Southeast Europe, it was known as the Balkans powder keg. And it went on to prove that a couple of times. It strikes me that as you describe the countries about the size of Maryland, that not getting along with your close neighbors is a little like Maryland not getting along with New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And I'm wondering, what moves are being made for regional reconciliation, which obviously would have economic benefits, and I assume the European Union is looking at that too for admission purposes?
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that question. Because regional policy for Croatia is one of the pillars of our, especially foreign policy. And we do realize, you know, that in spite of the history that we had, in spite of the wars and animosity, it is in our best interest to work with our neighbors. And ultimately, you know, the image of the country is also affected by the image of the region. And if the region has an image as a powder keg of the Balkans, then obviously, you know, you're not going to attract a lot of investment, a lot of tourists. So it's Croatia's position that, of course, regional cooperation is absolutely necessary in all aspects to have also free movements of people without any restrictions, movements of capital, etc. And we have been working on that in different aspects, different contexts. First is bilaterally with individual countries. With Serbia today, we have, I would say, really good relations. They have been completely normalized. We have a couple of open issues, such as the missing persons from the war in Croatia, the aggression against Croatia. The archives that were left in Belgrade, and Belgrade would just not give them back to Croatia or any other country. The division of diplomatic assets, and also the fact that when Yugoslavia fell apart, and our citizens had hard currency savings in the banks, they were just confiscated by the central bank in Belgrade. Now, we compensated our citizens through different programs and gave them the money back, but that, again, was financed by our own state budget, and we need to get the money back from Belgrade. Same goes for Slovenia or Bosnia and Herzegovina. So we are working on these open issues, but we are not making a big deal out of them in the public. We want to put more emphasis on positive cooperation, on trade, investment, and of course, bringing more tourists from Serbia to Croatia. And the number of Serbian tourists in Croatia has been on the rise for the past several years. We're working with Bosnia and Herzegovina and with other countries in that respect. Specifically with Bosnia and Herzegovina, we helped financially with different investments as well, with direct donations. We were also, when we were not member of NATO yet, we were the only non-NATO member country who participated in a NATO fund for a reintegration of former military personnel into civilian life, and, you know, helping those people to reintegrate into normal lives. We're helping Bosnia and Herzegovina with, for instance, we have given them our translations of the so-called acquis communautaire, which is the legislation of the European Union, consisting of about 100,000 pages of different directives and different treaties that they have to harmonize with. We have been teaching them how to harmonize legislation, how to implement it, using our experience in the process of European accession, because we believe that the stability and prosperity of the whole neighborhood of Southeast Europe will be achieved when the whole area is firmly anchored into NATO and the European Union. So we want our neighbors to follow us as soon as possible. And we hope that that Serbia will also change their mind, because right now they do not want to become members of NATO, but we would like to see them there, because being part of the same alliance, I think, removes the threat of any possible military action in the future, should anyone come to that idea. But I think that we've seen the last of fighting in the Balkans in that area. We work with Kosovo. We have actually helped very much with the case that they had before the International Court in The Hague, argued for Kosovo's independence and the constitution of Yugoslavia in 1974, which gave the republics the right to independence and the legal basis for that. There were some setbacks in our relationship with Belgrade because of our recognition and the assistance that we provide to Kosovo. But we, you know, our embassy in Belgrade was a little bit damaged, not as much as yours, but, you know, we expected it and we dealt with it, and we're, again, working on further normalization. Then we worked in the regional context. There are a lot of regional initiatives, such as CEFTA, which is the Central European Free Trade Area. We have free trade agreements with all the neighboring countries, and we've basically created a free trade area there. We have the so-called Southeast European Cooperation Initiative, which is a regional initiative that should help all the countries come closer to NATO and EU membership. And then the third aspect is working with the European Union itself, as Croatia is a candidate that will pretty soon become member. We will argue for the interests of our neighbors. So I'm happy to say that really we have put the past behind it, that we are working and trying to change that. That's why we don't like the word Balkans, but hopefully to change the connotations that this word brings, and that maybe we could become a positive example to some other parts of the world who have experienced or are experiencing similar or same problems. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
I understand Croatia is more Catholic than Orthodox or Muslim.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct. Croatia is predominantly Roman Catholic. Serbia is Eastern Orthodox. But of course, we have Serbian population who are most of them Serbian Orthodox. And we have Muslim population, and we have other religions as well.
When you took the refugees from Bosnia, were you taking Muslims, Catholics, Greek Orthodox?
All of them. We never asked. My own family took 3 Muslims to our house, and they were there for about 6 months. Even though we didn't have an obligation to do that, my mom wanted to do that. And at that time, you know, nobody looked at who was who. They were just refugees from the war, and we helped an obligation to help them. And as I told you, our obligation as a country of first acceptance was just to take those people. We could have put them into camps, but they never, ever were in camps. They were put into hotels and motels, which later on required a lot of renovation. But nevertheless, we wanted to be treated with dignity and respect. Most Muslims left then for other parts of Western Europe and the United States. Some Croats from Bosnia and Herzegovina remained in Croatia. We're trying to resettle them back in Bosnia and Herzegovina by providing financial and other means for them. But still, in some parts of Bosnia and Herzegovina, it's not easy to work on the ground because of the local. The central government is committed to refugee return, but there are a lot of problems on the local level. So we have this regional process of return of refugees, because obviously everything is interconnected. If you have refugees from Bosnia and Herzegovina occupying homes of Serbs in Croatia who had left and for a while and went to Serbia, obviously you need these people to go back in order to provide housing for the people who are coming back from Serbia. But since we were not able to do that, what we did is we were building actually new homes and new apartments for the Serb refugees to come back, or renovating their homes and then moving these people who were still refugees from Bosnia and Herzegovina to other housing, etc. It was a very complex, a very complicated process, and it required a lot of investment of energy, of resources, and of course a lot of educating people, because you have to help the local communities to accept what happened, they won't forget, but, you know, in a way to forgive, and to take the people back and reconcile with the fact that they will have to live with them and work for the benefit of their communities regardless of their ethnic background. And nowadays, just several years later, the process has really been a great success, and ethnically motivated incidents in Croatia had been really very, very few. I mean, maybe once or twice a year something happens that could be tied to an ethnically motivated incident.
You've talked about the impending EU membership or your aspirations for that, and clearly that's very important in terms of kind of ratifying the transformation that's taken place in Croatia. But what will that require of Croatia? It's a desirable goal, and yet also presumably there are some things that you will have to do in order to actually make that goal. What's EU membership requiring of Croatia?
I used to be Minister of European Integration and head of our delegation for negotiations for about 4 years, and I got that question a lot. And I was always, I would ask my staff, please, can you write down 10 things that, major things that we will benefit from, and like 10 of the disadvantages. And there was always the philosophical answers that nothing can be measured exactly. We can say that, a lot of people ask, we just regained our independence in the early 90s. We paid such a high price in human life, in physical destruction. Why do we want to become part of another structure that is not exactly a state, but that it's heading towards becoming some kind of a federation in the future, even though we see resistance within the European Union to that fact? So when we look at it, I mean, realistically speaking, no situation in life is ideal. There are always advantages and disadvantages. Croatia, as a rather small economy, it would be very tough on our own. And now with the examples of Iceland, who is trying to rush into the European Union, and he used to be the shining example of the anti-European movement in Croatia. Obviously, the fact that the security that you have within a larger monetary and fiscal system, being part of a very large market instead of 4.5 million people in Croatia and maybe, 30 million people altogether in our neighborhood, which is the primary source of our exports, you become part of a market that has hundreds of millions of people. So obviously gives you a lot more opportunities also for exchanges, for studying abroad, working abroad, the movement of capital, services, etc. What we have to do is we have been doing that for ever since independence. We knew we wanted to become members of the EU. So even though the EU did not want us at that time under any circumstances, we said, okay, we are not going to take a no for an answer. We'll start working on restructuring. We know what your criteria are. You publish them in the Copenhagen criteria, Maastricht and others. And we will try to reach that criteria on our own. We will start harmonizing our legislation, because it's a burdensome process that takes at least 10 to 15 years, and it's not done even once you become a member. We'll start all the restructuring in the environmental protection, agriculture, shipbuilding, subsidies, all of that. So once we started negotiations, we were not at the beginning of the process. We're really well into that process, which made things a lot easier. And the Brussels bureaucracy was so surprised that, we would submit our negotiating positions within 24 hours, and they were stunned. And their reaction, unfortunately, it's a big bureaucracy, does tend to slow things down. They would debate it for 6 months and come back to us and say, we accept your negotiating positions. And that is the reason why the negotiations themselves have not been as quick as we had expected. Unfortunately, that has affected the public opinion in Croatia, because sometimes they have a feeling, whatever we do, no matter what we do, we're still not good enough. The EU is tired from a last enlargement wave when 10 new countries joined. Not all of them, honestly, were quite ready to join. So I think that we're also becoming an example of a country that has to be fully ready when they join. But, I tell our people in Croatia, it's for our own benefit. Give or take a year or two or 3 years, it doesn't matter, as long as we're investing that money in Croatia and creating a better life in a better Croatia for all of our citizens. Thank you. Thank you.
You are listening to Addressing Alaskans with Croatia's ambassador to the United States, Kolinda Grabar-Kuratovic, and Senator Mark Begich. They met at an event hosted by the Alaska World Affairs Council and the World Trade Center of Alaska on Friday, August 27th, to discuss world commerce, reports from the Senate Commerce Committee, and Croatia's place in the world. Did you know that all Alaska World Affairs Council programs are available on KSKA.org? Volunteers William Toyer and Michael Cook record the programs each week, making them available for you on KSKA.org. Check out AWAC Presents, listed under podcasts on KSKA.org. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to all of the local groups featured on the show each week. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to kska.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.